Body, Mind, Spirit Radio, your life connection to the information for a healthy body, an enlightened mind, and a renewed spirit.
Welcome to Accept It As I Am on Body, Mind, Spirit Radio, brought to you on the fourth Thursday monthly from 10 to 11 a.m. Accept It As I Am is hosted by Barbara White. Barbara is a best-selling author, workshop leader, and the founder of the Accept It As I Am process. She owns a healing center in the Detroit metro area, and she is affectionately called a midwife for your soul. Guided by spirit, Barbara effortlessly brings you into the presence of God's love and ignites within you the knowing of your own self-inherent worth. To connect with Barbara, you can visit her site at www.acceptedasiam.com. And to connect with her right now, you can call into the show at 1-646-378-0378. And now for your host, Barbara White.
Hello, and thank you for joining us today at the Accepted As I Am Blog Talk Radio Show. And that's the first time I got to hear that intro. It's always interesting hearing things like that. There's a part of the mind that goes, who are they talking about? Are they talking about somebody else? So thank you so much for taking this time to get to know your body, your mind, your emotion in a way that is compassionate and loving. We've been given this incredible, incredible resource that is our body, that is our thoughts, that it is our emotions, that is the very doorway into a greater awareness of the love and the beauty and the joy that we are. It's interesting how our very body sensations can return us back into the wholeness and the fullness of our being. So I come to you here a week before Thanksgiving, and as Ram Dass has said, that if you think you are enlightened, then go home for Thanksgiving. For me, I have a very small family. I don't know about you, but I have two sisters, a mom, a dad, and a stepmom. The cousins and aunts and uncles, the few that I have are down in Florida. So it's actually, there's great blessings in that. We get along rather well, and people show up in love in the best way that they can. And not that there still isn't disagreements or incongruencies in communication, but it's. I really honor my little pod of my blood sisters, meaning I have spiritual sisters, but my blood sisters that show up in the best way they can. And so I'm grateful for that. We Thanksgiving morning, we have a ritual of heading out to the Thanksgiving parade here in Detroit. And we stand in the cold and we watch the bands go by, and we watch the floats go by, and then we come back and we have lunch. And I think I've pretty much talked my family into not having a turkey this year, and I'm really grateful for that too. I tend to be a vegetarian. If I do eat, I'd like my meat to, as I joke, I like it to be happy, meaning it was killed humanely or it was respected and honored in the process. And we know now with Fritz Popp, if you've looked at Fritz Popp's work, he actually registers the light around plants and animals that are treated with reverence and respect, and how there's greater light coherence. And light coherence is pretty darn important, because when light is coherent, those photons are coherent around vegetables, around your body, that's health. And when it's disorganized, that's not health. In fact, disorganized photons or disorganized light coherence is cancer in the body. So we know that cancer actually has a frequency of 45 degree hertz. And when your body's energy or light body is lower, you're ignoring your emotions, ignoring the body, ignoring that feedback. You lower your body to a lower frequency that is the same frequency as cancer. So when we take foods, whether they be vegetable or they be flesh, and they have greater light, literally greater light energy in them, we increase the light in our body. And when we have foods that could be that are less light bearing than or energy bearing, then it decreases the energy of our body. So something could have in the label all this list of vitamins and nutrients, but if it's been packaged and processed and chopped and boiled and reprocessed and pasteurized, it's probably not going to have a lot of light. An example I used to give when I first started 14 years ago, I was primarily natural health, so home toxicology, naturopathy, acupuncture, and I would teach a lot about our food and our bodies. And I used to give an example of if you took a carrot and you boiled it once, and then you chopped it up, and then you put it in a food processor, and then for good measure you put it into the microwave for 3 minutes. How much energy is it going to have in it? How much nutrients, how much life force will it have in it? But that's a lot of the process that our food goes through, the canned foods, the packaged foods, is they have to be not only either pasteurized or boiled or disinfected, so to speak, or cooked, they also have to be radiated. A lot of our food is radiated to because it does sit in the truck for so long, or it does it has to go into a can or a plastic container to keep it from producing molds, it will be radiated. So it's good to know that, right? This is not negative. This is not saying, you know, wrap yourself in a bubble and go live in your basement. It's really saying just be more conscious about the food that you put in your body and notice how you feel after you eat it. I love coffee, and I've said this on different shows. I have an affection for coffee. However, I do notice my body actually being more energized by green drinks, and even just taking a good old-fashioned blender, throwing 3 carrots in there and an apple, and blending that up and drinking that. That will give me more energy than a cup of coffee, although I'm not going to stop drinking coffee when I like it. But I find, like, when I'm asking somebody to shift their coffee drinking or shift their sugar drink, their sugar eating, I'll say add something in rather than pulling something away. And if you can add a greening supplement, something that has chlorella, wheatgrass, spirulina in it, living live foods in it, have a blended drink of live foods, you'll notice the cravings for processed or junk food begins to fall away. And spiritual growth is actually the same way. You know, we try to stop a negative behavior or self-sabotaging thing that we're thinking or doing. And if we try to just rip it away, we just try to say, okay, stop doing that. Stop it. You know, we get the ruler out and we smack ourselves in our mind, or we attack ourselves for doing that thing that was so stupid. That doesn't really stop the behavior. It doesn't really prevent us from engaging in it again. And when we take that same approach of filling ourselves up before trying to strip something away, that when we bring awareness is that incredible light that goes across the fields in your mind and in the earth, that awareness is that healing waters that replenish the roots and the soil of a plant and of your own body. That awareness really is such a simple word for what does so much. Awareness could also be awareness without judgment, without reaction. A simple awareness could also be called self-acceptance, self-love. That awareness is the very ointment that our body, that our heart, that our emotions need. And I know awareness can be easier said than done, right? Because if we are so distracted by other people's problems, or distracted by TV, or distracted by just the incredible pace that people live their lives, never really questioning, well, maybe I don't need to do this, and this. There's a living a life and a have to, a obsessive action, or as Joanna Macy calls it, the industrial growth society. That our pace is really not the world's norm. That when you look at other cultures and you look at cultures that haven't been touched by the indigenous or the industrial growth society, even ones that aren't, you know, and this is going to be a rude comment, but in a loincloth, completely no technology, nothing. I'm not going to that extreme. Even if we look at cultures like Brazil, the pace that they live is far slower than the pace that we live here in Michigan. And if you're not in Michigan, the research shows that the closer you are to a metropolis, And the colder the weather, the faster the pace. Isn't that interesting? So the closer you live to a city and the colder the weather, the faster the pace. So it's just being aware of that, too, that really when you become aware of these cultural assumptions and the ways that we're living, you begin and you become aware of it in a way that's not shaming the culture. I'm not calling society wrong or bad, because certainly any way that we make others wrong, we are inversely also making ourselves wrong. It's just an encouragement towards growth, an encouragement towards life, an encouragement towards what is bringing life energy in our body and what's not. And then a noticing of that, right? A gentle witnessing of that. What is bringing me life? And what is depleting life in my body? So when we begin to add in that awareness that is the very essence of the cosmos functioning within our own body, our own life, we begin to heal things that we may have spent years toiling and struggling, trying to fix, trying to change, a behavior that we've been trying to change and fix. Did you know that fixing is one of the insidious ways that we shame ourselves? It's also why people naturally react almost in repulsion when you offer advice they didn't really ask for. Did you ever notice that? People get angry. Because when we're offering something that hasn't had a, whether it be verbal or energetic invitation, we're actually coming from the intention of shaming. I know we may care very deeply about that person. However, it's not love that motivates that unsolicited advice or giving. It's really fear. And anytime we fear something, if we're not aware and cognizant of that fear, our mind will use shame as a way of trying to control it. So shame is a energy that is making whatever we're feeling, whatever we're experiencing, wrong. So whatever we're feeling and whatever we're experiencing now becomes wrong. I want to read you this quote from Pema Chodron that just seems to flow. Let's see if my computer will agree with me here with what we're talking about. And it is, my computer's being interesting, I'll say that. All right, it's bringing up a part of it. I was, I'm really grateful to say I'm writing the final, initial rough draft of my master's paper. So some of you know who have listened, I'm getting another master's, and this one is focusing on connection to our bodies and to the earth and the psychology of that. Why we've become so disconnected from our emotions and our bodies and the earth, and how can we reconnect? What that reconnection is called, there's a whole field in science called eco-psychology. And as I joke, eco-psychology is not running around asking the tree how it feels. It is really a theory and practice of reconnecting our bodies, ourselves, that realizing all our parts, including our brains and consciousness, are crafted from the raw materials of the earth. And when we begin to touch back into the natural animal nature of our bodies, we begin to remember what it means to be fully human. And so it's like in yoga how they say you've got to go down to go up. You got to go in to go out. And we've got to reconnect with our sense, the sensorium of our experience, to really realize the broader fullness of life. So I'm looking for that quote that I wanted to read about awareness and shame from, oh, there it is. I'll read you a couple of really wonderful quotes I put into my master's thesis. And by the way, I'm putting together in the beginning of 2015 a retreat that is incorporating body connection into nature, and really coming into the fullness of our being, exactly what I'm talking about here. It's also going to work with I'm going to offer people my master's thesis to read, but much of the retreat is not intellectual or academic. It is very experiential, and that's where I see value, where people get to experience that connection to life, to their bodies, and really bring that greater fullness back into their everyday experience. Too often spirituality is so esoteric, and it's great, you know. Let's talk about I love hearing about those kind of things. But for me, I'm very interested in the ordinary. I'm very interested in how can everyday life be magnificent and full and spiritual. And that when we can bring these things that are these teachings, these practices that are really engaging us in our awareness in the moment, we allow that every day to be our teacher. We allow our everyday activities to be a form of worship. And we allow that connection, those ordinary connections with our family, with people we meet at work, we allow those ways to be in an intimate relationship with the universal beloved. So I'm really interested in that. I'm really interested in bringing these, the profundity of the cosmos and your incredible dynamic spirit, but really bringing it into the experiential. And based on the feedback I get on my retreats, that's something that is done, that is accomplished. That people leave really tasting the next level, the next opening of their own divinity. All right, so I will read that quote on empathy. This is tying into awareness, yes? So awareness of our life, awareness of all things. Maybe I didn't put that quote. There it is. So this is from Pema Chodron, who I am a big fan of. She is a Buddhist nun for 30 years. She's written When Things Fall Apart, Getting Unstuck. You can go to her lectures on YouTube. Great resource. Her name is spelled P-E-M-A and Chodron. With the umlauts above the O and the O, Chodron. And the quote is as follows: opening to all that is happening in the body and emotions, an openness is cultivated within one's own being and life. If your everyday practice is opening to all your emotions, to all people you meet, to all situations you encounter, without closing down, trusting that you can do that, then that will take you as far as you can go. And then, however, you'll understand all the teachings that anyone has ever taught. So that's experiencing life just as it is, as registered through our body's emotional and physical sensation. Seems so simple, right? But sometimes if we're unable to classify or label our experience, that experience actually loses its value. In this perceived loss of control, you know, we have to relate to life, an animal, another, as equal. So we honor the reciprocity of perception with people, trees, animals, and some of our human specialness has to fall away, yes? See, things that we classify as natural or animal, we then feel it's okay for us to mistreat it. So indigenous cultures, more animal-like, right? We can mistreat them. Women with their bleeding bodies and birthing process, it's okay to mistreat them. And then, of course, animals are very animal-like. So we can see them just as a resource, to serve our human greed, our human consumption. There's a book that I love called The Spell of the Sensuous. It's by David Abram, and he talks about the reconnecting back into our senses. And there's a quote from the Los Angeles Times. I think I've quoted it a little bit earlier, but it says, long-awaited revolutionary, this book ponders the violent disconnection of the body from the natural world and what this means and how we live it and die for it. And then it goes on. It says, a landmark book has written the best instructional manual for becoming fully human. So becoming fully human through our own awareness of our bodies, awareness of our own feedback within our bodies. So when we listen to our body's feedback, we tap into an inner connection with life and the natural world. And within our body's own sensorium of information, we're provided a doorway into the non-dual transpersonal connection, into the river of existence. So really educating and understanding how we're disconnected from our own bodies, how we're disconnected from our own sexuality, is important in healing ourselves and healing the environment and cultivating this greater intimacy with our body's sensations. We actually enter into relationship with nature, with others, with God, and separation begins to fall away. And then sensitively approaching our bodies, our sexuality, approaching it with reverence, we begin to notice a reciprocity in what we're touching and what we're engaging, realizing that what we're engaging is also engaging us. And then connecting into our body's feedback and honoring the sacred flow of our sexual energy, we begin to allow an organic connection with all of life that really supports and nourishes us into greater expressions. So, if you're wondering in this moment, what does that mean? Listening to my body's feedback, listening to my awareness. It sounds very mystical. It sounds very, sounds nice, right? But the actual practicum of it is a simple listening, being still to your body's sensations. Many times when I take someone through this process, they'll come up with thoughts about their body, thoughts about what they're feeling, and not even recognize they're having a thought. And I know when somebody takes me through a body awareness practice or a somatic-type psychology, I'm not even realizing I'm adding thoughts and story to my body's feedback. So again, it's a process, it's a practice. So let's do a little bit of the practice, a little bit of the experiential, as much as we can here online and on the phone. And so just to begin, just notice how you're feeling 1 through 10. So 10 being completely blissful, 1 feeling depressed, apathetic, disconnected. How are you feeling 1 through 10? So there's no wrong or right answer. Just get knowing it. You know, I don't have to announce your number on Facebook. just picking the first number that comes to your head, or that you sense. All right, now. So noticing now as you look down at your body, even your eyes with your eyes half open, looking down at your body, gazing at your physical body. I'm going to have you keep your eyes open because I find that when people close their eyes, they tend to actually disassociate more from their body connection. So as you're gazing at your legs, how do your legs feel? So a physical sensation is things like spacious, heavy, light, fiery, watery, airy, earthy, mucky, mushy, solid. So what is the physical sensation in your legs? maybe you've got some leg pain. So your response is, okay, I have pain in this knee. And then after you notice the pain in the knee, notice the whole leg. Notice the sensations of the whole legs. Sometimes people will just say, well, I have pain in my legs, and then they just stop there. Keep your inquiry going. So how do your legs, what are the physical sensations in your legs? Great. Now, once you label that physical sensation, just notice and be aware of it and breathe. Try not to make whatever you're experiencing wrong. Try not to fix it. Practice this open awareness within your own physical body. And keep on breathing and watching. And now, noticing your abdomen. Does your abdomen, what's the physical sensation there? Does it feel full? Does it feel empty? Does it feel fluid? Does it feel expanded? Does it feel constricted? What are the physical sensations in your abdomen? Good. And once you label it and you notice it, just watch and breathe. Watch and breathe. And then noticing your arms. How do your arms feel? When was the last time you tuned in to just your arms? What are the physical sensations in your arm? Again, once you label it, come back to your breath. Beautiful. And then noticing your back. How does your back feel? Lengthened? Short? Tight? Relaxed? Warm? Cold? Okay? Not okay. How does your back feel? How does the upper back, what's a physical sensation in the upper back compared to the physical sensation in the lower back? Great. Now, once you notice that, come back to your breath. Great. Now noticing your shoulders and your neck. How does your shoulders and neck feel? And then once you notice that and you label it, come back to your breath. And then how does your face and your head feel? Label that. And then come back to your breath again. And then if you've closed your eyes, open your eyes back up and look down at your body again with reverence, with respect, and be aware of your whole body. And now check in again. We had started off with how do you feel 1 through 10. Has there been a change in that? Do you notice that possibly you feel a little bit more alive, a little bit more present? And maybe right now you feel alive and more present, but you're also noticing maybe a physical pain or emotional pain that you are avoiding. That's okay. See, when you're in awareness, awareness is happiness. Awareness is the you that remains witnessing, watching, and in the bliss of life while changing conditions happen around you and within you. So you can be in awareness, the you that knows you have thoughts, the you that knows that you have a body, that's your awareness. That awareness allows you to be happy even when your emotional body may be sad. So just checking in. You feel a little bit more aware, a little bit more awake, a little bit more in that fuller you. Now, guess what? If you enjoyed this process, you can always use this archive again and go through that meditation we just did. And also, I ask you a favor in offering you this meditation to please share or pass on the information of this show to someone, whether it be this show or the Body, Mind, Spirit Radio, always passing on this incredible resource. So if you could do that, that would be wonderful. What kind of choices would you make in your life from a deeper body connection, an intimacy with your own body, with your own emotional and physical feedback? See, now there may not be any direct thoughts that come up, but just invite that awareness. If I was to bring this greater witnessing and watching to my own body and my own feelings, how would that affect my choices? My choices in what I eat, my choices in relationship, my choices in how I show up in the world. When I begin to become more cognizant of what I'm feeling and what I'm thinking, it makes it hard to blame what we're feeling or thinking on others. Now, don't worry if you're a blamer. We're all blamers, right? You know, initially when something happens, we're like, if she wouldn't have just done blah, 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 then I wouldn't have this going on. Or if they wouldn't have stimulated this response in me, then I wouldn't be feeling this way. So we're all blamers. You know, it's the first thing we reach for. You know, someone says a sentence to me that triggers me, of course my mind's going to initially go, well, they need to be more blah, blah, blah. They need to be more da, 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 da. But it's actually noticing my emotional response and then noticing that need that I have. Maybe it's a need for respect. Maybe it's a need for support, a need for love, and honoring the fullness of my own need. I actually realize the fullness of my own being. Too often we notice our needs and then we obsessively try to get them met from others. But it's not until we really honor our need, our feelings and our needs, can we even have those needs met. Another way of saying that, when we move into greater self-love, then we allow others to love us. But if you've listened to other shows or you've worked with me, I'm a big teacher of honoring our feelings and needs. It's a simple process that brings this magical, expansive word of self-love, self-acceptance, or authentic happiness into the practical everyday life. And when we begin to listen to the feelings and needs of others, when they're expressing, we connect empathically to them without trying. So it's a beautiful thing that happens when we love ourselves. We just naturally, without trying, begin to love others. So I'm going to shift gears for a moment. So just take a breath. And I'm giving you a little preemptive warning here. So stand up, move around a bit. I think I'll do that. A little stretch. Ah. All right, you ready? All right, I'm going to move into talking a little bit more about a body connection and our sexuality. Read you a little bit of my master's thesis because I'm so excited. It's getting towards the end of it being done after 2 years of working on it. And I want to use this quote here. It says, "Rejection and suppression of our sexuality is the underlying reason for the disconnect of the body. Much of the rejection derives from a fear of our human sexuality. The roots are tangled but seem predominantly to do with sexuality's biologicalness. Its unwillingness to be regulated in the way our sexuality exposes us to emotional and physical vulnerability." So a dimension of this work is ecofeminism, honoring that how we treat our bodies, how we treat the earth, and vice versa. And ecofeminist studies reconnect the mentally understood self to the body and the earth. The studies focus on developing a self that includes the body, the matter, as well as the mind. But just be aware, this is contrary to the language in St. Paul, used in King James Version of the Bible, where there's references between the war between the spirit and the flesh. And these biblical interpretations give somewhat of a negative connotation to the body and impose a patriarchal view of the body. And the bodily world is inferior and evil. And it disconnects our ability to connect and care about the world crisis. Some historians and philosophers have even concluded that the Jewish and Christian traditions with their otherworldly God are primarily responsible for civilization's neglectful attitude towards the environment and the earth. They cite as evidence the Hebraic God's injunction to humankind in Genesis, "Be fertile and increase, fill the earth and master it, and rule the fish of the sea, the birds of the sky, and all the living things that creep on the earth." But really, our body hate, our hate of the earth, has gone back to Galileo. Okay, somebody help me out. Courtney, you still there? Courtney's helping to screen. You know what I'm talking about. Galileo. All right, and I sound pretty stupid right now, but that's okay. We can laugh at me. Let's give you a good laugh. So that philosopher laid the ground for separation of spirit and matter by asserting that only properties of matter, the physical earth, that are directly amenable and mathematically measurable are real. So the other more subjective qualities, such as sound, taste, and color, are merely illusionary impressions. And since this book of nature was written by Galileo,
It's actually Galileo.
Galileo. I was hoping you'd come rescue me. Galileo. I'm gonna phonetically spell that out. That's so funny. Galileo. I get that from my dad actually. Him and I will be reading and writing and talking about things, but for the life of us, Galileo. Okay. All right, thank you, Courtney.
Not a problem.
So the book that Galileo wrote was called The Book of Nature, but this Book of Nature was actually a language of mathematics alone. So this is pre-Socrates, pre-Aristotle, and laid the foundation of thought and humanity. And then also what came along a couple thousand years later, but created what's called the Cartesian split of the body and matter is Descartes' Meditations in 1641. And that is the cultural assumption that matter is inert and lifeless, and that the only being or the only living matter that has the ability to think is human. That humans have the only capacity to actually be alive and thinking, and animals and plants and the sunshine, it has no energy or consciousness within its own self. It's lifeless. It's just a lump of matter. And I'm not exaggerating. These are what these teachings say, and this approach that we have to animals and the barbaric things that we do to them in their farming practices and in our scientific studies where we cut them open with no anesthesia, and still going on today. And then Newtonian science came along, right? And that's the perception that when we separate things into parts, we'll be able to understand them further. So we're going to keep on breaking the cell into greater and greater parts. First we thought it had this membrane, and then we realized it has a nucleus, and then we realized that beyond the cell there is these atoms that have protons and electrons, and beyond that is the quarks. And if we just understand really the quarks and we break it down even more, eventually we'll understand life. And, of course, that's how we approach our own body, right? We just keep on breaking it into parts, breaking it into parts, and then eventually, somehow, we will finally understand it, finally understand the secret of life. So this science and philosophy encouraging this duality, this mechanistic, reductionist way of understanding the body and the mind hasn't led to some eternal bliss of, okay, now I can classify all these elements and know all these parts, and I am now completely free. Whereas ecology really shows the interrelationship and connection of things, that the living systems and body and nature evolve and are composed of many relating elements, not parts, that through feedback loops and interrelated subsystems, the natural world shows there's a capacity within an open system to find balance and functionality. That biological structures of these systems and expressions are really an underlying processes that represents the system's own self-organization. So what does that mean? So what that means is, in nature there are examples of parts that are whole unto themselves, these subsystems, these little ecosystems, as well as the beings themselves. They are whole unto themselves. They're holons, H-O-L-O-N-S. That I can pronounce. But they're whole unto themselves, and these whole parts are interacting with other parts, other whole parts. Or as my spiritual teacher says, a different way of putting this spiritually is that God or creation is everywhere in its fullness, but not in one place. So ecology actually shows us that, the way that the environment interacts. And then when we really look at the body and how it is constantly communicating to the other parts, we realize that's how the body interacts. That when I receive a stimulus or I come into awareness of something in my whole body, so if I think of something that brings me pleasure or joy, let's say a really great hug from a friend, and I really think of that, my heart instantly responds, the chemicals in my body respond. And even though we know what parts of the brain are responsible for that, there's nothing in our neurobiology that can explain that instantaneous reaction. You understand what I'm saying? That instantaneous chemical reaction that happens in our body, throughout my whole body, cannot happen if it was just relying on neuropeptides and electrical impulses. That the response is too fast. See, the response is an interrelated, non-dual energetic relationship with that, what I'm observing or thinking about. What am I explaining? But the energetics and the neurobiology to oneness, that in that observing or thinking of that thing or that person, I'm actually in an intimate relationship with it, and that my body energetically responds before my neurons, before my chemistry, before my electrical system can respond. Pretty amazing, huh? Another way of explaining that is two ways of really valuing experience over like this experiential reality. A few ways of explaining that. One way is we can know all the components of a bat, right? I'll read the quote from the guy that, well, maybe I'll just jump down to him. Well, I may not be able to find it, but I'll just jump to it right now. That all with all our research into an animal, let's take a bat, we still don't know what it feels like to be a bat. For instance, I can know the chemical constituents of water, hydrogen, two hydrogen and oxygen, but I won't know until I actually drink the water what it feels like to drink water. But see, we've lost the value of our own experiential reality. We have been taught through Newtonian science. See, I don't know how to pronounce it, through Galileo, whatever. Through our own, and I can go into that later, through our own language, through religion, we've been taught to deny the value of our own subjective experience. That our taste, our smell, our feel, our sensual perception of things has now been discounted. That unless I can label it, put it in a test tube, or do a double-blind study of it, it doesn't have value. In fact, have you ever noticed, Jeremy Hayward talks about this, and I've talked about this book before. He's a quantum physicist who wrote letters to his daughter about the magic and energy and feeling sense awareness of life, but he did it in a way that was so relatable. It's letters to a Vanessa. And he says, if you ever want to end a conversation, just say, this study says, that when we remain in greater inquiry into our own body's sense awareness, we move beyond what the study says and really into the mystery of life, that when we're tapped into that question, the fertility of the question, the mystery of life, we feel more alive, right? It's like a child, and when they approach a field and they're 2 years old and they see it for the first time, and there's just a magic to life. And recapturing that magic, recapturing that joy, that if somebody handed you a bouquet of flowers, you wouldn't go, oh, well, they're just going to die in 2 days. That you were really in the magic and the smell and the that you knew as you smelt those flowers, they were smelling you back. They were sensing you back. And that you come into an interrelationship with things that allows you to feel that support and that love and the attachment to life. Definitely a different way of walking, yes? Different way of being. There's a book by Al Gore that says Earth in Balance. And he says, why can't God be in human beings and in the earth? And Gore later discusses how responsible Christians is one that is a true servant or steward to both animals and the environment. And I don't know if you know, the discussion of environmental issues has expanded so much in recent Bible studies that there's been over 500 entries just recently in the last year on ecology and justice and the environment in Christian faith. Somebody that has been around for a while, Matthew Fox, he has a book also that's called The Coming of the Cosmic Christ, The Healing of Mother Earth and Global Renaissance. And he calls for a relationship between God and every creature and a spiritual awakening that will return to our awareness of God as Mother. See, when we lost God as Mother and only as Father, we lost our ability to feel nurtured and supported by life, by our own bodies, by the environment. God as Father is very important, yes. I'm not discounting Father. However, God as Mother, we allow a nourishing, nutritive, holding relationship with ourselves and with people we interact. And even our perceptions as God as only Father, we discount even mothering within our own culture, which makes you question when fundamental religions are angrily speaking about the devaluing of the family unit or of mothering. I'm wondering if it's their own theologies that have promoted that. It's their own teachings of God only as Father and a kind of just a vague mention of Mother Mary and her importance once a year, maybe the Day of the Divine Mother, but most churches don't even celebrate that. That it's their own dishonoring of the mother and the mothering principles that have brought forth the dishonoring of mothering. Eastern traditions, now shifting gears for a moment, Eastern traditions have a more positive view of the body and sexuality, even implying the body has a capacity to heal and promote life. And Taoism actually teaches that a woman's body has a capacity to heal the earth and that her menses, her moon cycle, has the ability to clear negative energy. In fact, in the Qigong that I know and I use, it's the female uterus and her menses can actually pull negative energy from her partner and transform it. But she could actually use that same powerful energy of her uterus to heal the earth. But unfortunately, of course, women are so disconnected from their body that they begin to label their period as a and menopause as some type of disease to be solved. You know, I have PMS, I have menopause. Instead of really honoring it with a, when you're on your period, you're powerful, ladies, not weak. And when you're in menses, you're reaching the next stage of your mastery. You're becoming more awesome, not dry and withered and devalueless. So re-honoring, again, the essence of our own body. Men too, men absolutely, men as well. But focusing in this moment on the menses and the period, that this that sacred process in our body is so powerful. Oh my gosh. So you look at it, Hinduism, and Hinduism is actually a religion of nature. Traditional Hindu texts will talk about the natural world and it's not dead. But they teach about the natural world as the body of God, who animates humans and all objects, whether living or non-living. And again, as you are hearing, I am not the greatest pronunciator of things. Vedantic Hinduism, V-E-N-D-A-N-T-I-C, teaches that all distinctions and dualisms between spirit and matter are illusionary. And of course, this is a quote from Thich Nhat Hanh, that Buddhism honors all of life as sacred, and the non-dual connection between matter and spirit. So somehow we've lost that natural indigenous, whether it be indigenous Hinduism type, Buddhist type, and then you see that's why Eastern religion or Eastern philosophies are really, can be a great complement to anyone's current spirituality or Judea type Christian religion. That it's really a honoring. It's not. In fact, Buddhism doesn't call itself a religion. It calls itself a training of the mind, because there's nothing that you're really worshiping or devoting to in Buddhism. There's no. In fact, Buddhism doesn't really even call itself Buddhism. There is a, in coming back to, I'm going to skip forward here in the paper, but in coming back to the Buddhist teachings, it's really, again, it's just a study of the mind. And in Buddhism, they have a principle of what creates the self in the mind called the five aggregates. And the five aggregates are also called skandhas, S-K-A-N-D-H-A-S. And these five aggregates or five ways of perceiving are what create our perception of self. So it starts with matter and then sensation and then our perception and then our mental formations and then our consciousness. This was also taught to me from my authentic movement teacher, Stephanie. She says, how did she explain it to me? We have a thought and then a judgment and then a concept and then a story. So if we can actually come back to the, so we make contact with something or someone, if we can come back to sensation, come back to that body sensation, we can actually avoid a lot of suffering. In Brené Brown's work, Power of Vulnerability, her research shows that shame actually registers in the body the same exact way as if we just got in a car accident or physically attacked. Sometimes it's hard to recognize when you're in shame, right? When you have those negative attacking stories. I mean, it becomes such a way of life. Those unworthiness stories of, or why you shouldn't be feeling this way. When you should on yourself, that's shame. That's self-attack. That's attaching unworthiness to your current reality. or somehow you need to fix something or become better, and this relationship will get better, and this work situation will become better. That's shame. That's self-attack. And when you get caught in what I call a shame attack, it's beginning to recognize your body's own sensations can be a great way out of it. So for me, when I'm in a shame attack, my solar plexus will clap, my chest will be tight, and I will, my mind will be in a speedy 200-mile race to, it's going to sound funny, but this is what it does, to do affirmations and prayers. Now, if I wasn't connected to my body sensation, I could really begin to believe that surface reality I was creating in my mind. It really makes me wonder, you know, it's how we have that happy face mask so implanted in our face that we begin to believe our own illusion. And then when we begin to check down with the body, we realize that we have created a complete lie. That when we begin to listen to our body's precious feedback, we become more aware of that natural internal progression from that initial sensory contact, thought, judgment, concept, and story, as well as we're able to really see if we are living in alignment with our deeper truths, if we're living in alignment with things that actually serve us. So in listening to our felt sense without allowing the mental abstractions to overlay the direct experience, we invite the body to lead the way into greater understanding and connection. This embodied experiential sense draws us into greater contact with what's happening in the here and now. See, the body cannot lie. The body will let you know where you're really at. And now, the process that I take people through in one-on-one sessions, whether it be in person or on the phone in retreats, it's really noticing, how does that belief or thought feel in the body? Is it life-giving? Or does that thought or belief bring a feeling of being drained? Again, the processes that I use, the self-acceptance processes, are so simple. Yet, we want the complex, right? You know, diagnose me and give me some really complex answer, because this everyday practical self-love, self-acceptance, you know, it's too much work. But I think if we realize how much suffering we're in and how this everyday practical self-love, body awareness can really bring us into, free us of that suffering, it doesn't seem like work. You know, there's that famous quote that says when the tension to remain in the bud outweighs the risk to grow, we choose to grow. I believe that's by Francis Annan. Is that quote? I may be wrong on that. I'll let you know. I'm the first person to call myself out. I stand in my own magnificence and greatness, but also my imperfections. All of it is beautiful. All right, I think we're entering into the tail end of our time together. And I'm so grateful that you took this time to get to know you and love you. Please spread the word about this work. It's the self-acceptance process and the unique flavor that I bring to self-love. I've seen it cause great changes in people's life, fabulous changes. I'm really grateful for that. I'm grateful to be part of the work, to be the delivery of the work. You can also go to acceptedasiam.com. Of course, you're welcome to call me for a phone session if you're out of state, or if you're in state, I'd love to meet you, 734-455-1438. And I welcome any questions at Barbara, B-A-R-B-R-A, six letters, at acceptedasiam.com. And you can also go to Square, there's a contact button at my website now. All right, so thank you very much for taking this time for yourself, and know that a daily practice, even if you commit to it 3 days out of the week, do that for a month, you'll notice some great changes. Much love for you and all that you do, and know that you are worth this effort and this time, and I'm really grateful to be part of that with you. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and I look forward to connecting with you next month. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.